department. I'm told you are also joined by the the Water Research Commission. You're welcome. And after that, we will be having a workshop on the Minamata Convention on Mercury. I see here the department will be briefing us on the background. We'll also have the department again coming in on the inventory. There is a groundwork that will also be talking to status quo on the phase out of mercury in the South African health sector and an analysis of mercury in products in South Africa. And then we'll also get a briefing from the South African Weather Services, and then we will adjourn. So from the program, it looks like it's going to be a long day, but I hope that we can summarize the inputs. Welcome everybody. Let's hand over to the DG, but before that, I think we've got one apology here from the minister, who will not be able to join us today. She will be attending meetings of two cabinet committees in Pretoria from 8:30. Okay, and we also have that standing one from the DM. I think she's said she'll be in Mpumalanga. KZN yesterday, Mpumalanga today. Kekana, Honorable Kekana, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Luyenge, they've also submitted apologies. All right, DG.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. We, as the Chair has already introduced, the DDG, Mark Gordon, will lead the presentation outlining the policy science interface, and the Water Research Commission will be sharing the science related to the challenges of the microplastics, microbeads, and especially in relation to the water resources. And the DDG from the Oceans and Coast, Ms. Judy Beaumont, will then deal with both the impacts on the ocean and our planned response as a country in respect of plastic pollution. So I would like to introduce then from the Water Research Commission is Eunice Mambi. Mamba Jaswa, is it correct? All right, sorry. Mamba Jaswa. She will introduce herself, but she's Eunice, Honorable Chair, when she presents. Now I hand over
from
to...
From the Research Commission.
Yes, Water Research Commission, thank you. So Mark will then begin the presentation. Over to you, Chair.
Okay, Mark. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DG, colleagues, officials, members of the public. Chair, the focus of this presentation is really looking at the policy approaches towards the management of plastic. And we put forward some recommendations in terms of end-of-life options, in terms of how we're managing. And we're sharing the entire plastics management issues and its impact on the environment together with the research work, as DG mentioned, from Water Research Commission and the impacts from in the marine environment from Judy Beaumont. Chair, just to introduce to say that this matter is quite a big issue. It's been very topical in recent months. There's been a lot of media interest in this, both in South Africa and globally, based on a few pieces of research work that's been done all around the world. and the impacts that we are beginning to now discover about plastics, and especially the microplastics. In terms of an introduction, I think we've passed that. Global plastic use continues to increase around 4% per annum, with about 322 million tons produced worldwide in 2015, according to an organization, the Association of Plastics Europe. Production of plastics accounted for between 4 to 8% of global fossil use in 2015, according to the World Economic Forum. And while South Africa accounts for less than 0.5% of global plastics production, this still amounts to about 1.5 million tons of plastic consumed in South Africa annually for various uses. The next slide here just basically talks to the aspect of how plastic flows occur around the world. And what we really want to convey in this slide message here is that it's a linear story largely. That about 40% of all plastics produced end up in landfills around the world. 32% call it leakage, but it really ends up in the environments, in the oceans and rivers of the world. 14% goes into some energy recovery. 14% of the 2% in the closed loop system actually goes for the recycling. But the bulk of plastics, and this is a concern around what we call single-use plastics, and the permanence and pervasiveness of plastic, that is short-lived in terms of its use. We create a plastic cup, it's used for a few minutes, and then discarded. Plastic bottles, their lifespan is a few minutes or most for a day, and then discarded. So the issue of plastics is its permanency, its fragility in the environment. We say that plastic does not break down, it just breaks up. So the issue of microplastics in the ocean is actually plastic that was once produced as products, but because of the action of the ocean and the way it breaks up over time into microplastics. In South Africa, the recycling rate is about 21% at the moment, according to Plastic Safety in 2016. The alternative uses of plastic at the end of life is an acceleration for energy recovery. It's made from petroleum, so there's a lot of energy in plastics. Recycling practices allow for value recovery whilst reducing the demand for new plastic resins and fossil fuels used to produce them. So, in terms of the use of virgin material, in terms of resins, polyethylene, and other petroleum-based molecules used for plastics, they continue to rise and increase in terms of new virgin stock and new virgin material that's used for making plastics. In 2011, our baseline study at that time concluded that around 80% of plastic was being recycled, but 1.3 million tons were produced, and only about 235,000 tons recycled. In terms of the use of plastic, largely used in packaging. So if you go to supermarkets, you find your muffin there and sandwich is probably wrapped in three or four layers of packaging. There's a lot of packaging used in food and other products like electronics and other fragiles. And so there's a lot of most of the plastic that we use in packaging. The next highest use, apart from other, is in building construction. What we just show you, Chair, is the comparison with Europe. So, for instance, we use more packaging
guidance of science around the world's oceans that have become the core kind of ocean foes or the substitute of landfills on land, but the waste sites in the oceans that have huge amounts of plastic in them. This study confirms that South Africa is number 11 on the list of the amount of plastic that is mismanaged. So we call it the mismanagement of plastic, which is 56% in South Africa, number 11. And you can see the results there from other parts of the world. China, the highest, 27%, and 76%. Indonesia, 83%. And the study really concluded and goes to some conclusions around the amount of infrastructure, policies, enforcement, the level of development as well as the countries, and the fact that results in leakage of plastic into the environment. Moving on, we talk about uncontained plastic litter affects the overall energy of regions. So there's one aspect of litter management compared to waste management. It's two different concepts in a way, and yet it's a factor of level of development in the country, and we can make the study available, and it gives a lot of substance in terms of why we have this need to the environment. So South Africa is number 11. We're not too proud about this statistic, and we can share some policy approaches on how we want to curtail it and better management of plastic in South Africa. And it really comes down to improved collection and sorting systems, opportunities for increasing recycling operations and sales, and also creating options for energy recovery processes. Moving on to some of the approaches we've used in South Africa, in around 2003, under the auspices of the then Minister of Environment, Bali Musa, there was an MOU signed between government, labor, business, including NEDLAC, around the management of plastic at that time, including in plastic bags and ribbon liners. In 2003, we promulgated the plastic bag regulations that called for a compulsory certification of the thickness of plastic bags. And that came in 2012 with another standard for garbage bin liners, the so-called black plastic bag. And here the intention here was that if we had increased the thickness of the bag, the intention was that to make it more recyclable and kind of reduce the amount of new plastic bags that come into operation based on the premise that it was thicker, people would use it more often, becomes more reusable, and in terms of the recycling process, it's also more recyclable. At the same time, the plastic bag levy was introduced again as a disincentive. We call these market-based instruments or economic instruments to discourage the use of plastics. We decided to have taxes shared for consumers as a means to disincentivize the use. Unfortunately, at the time when we started, it was 3 cents. We're now at 55 cents on the price of the bag. And because of the huge elasticity in the system, which we didn't predict at the time, one would argue that even if we had to double the The next slide, Chair, also talks about the flow of plastic again, but here we're focusing on 68% of the bottom right-hand corner, where there's a huge amount of informal picking, waste picking. This is an important aspect, Chair, because a large number of our recycling companies, the big companies that impact Safi, Mondi, all of them, they depend a lot on the informal collection of packaging products that they depend on for their processes to make the engine reduce, reuse, recycle, waste hierarchy. The Act, the Waste Act, makes provision for what is known as industry waste management plans. In 2008, as you know, we are busy rolling them out for the priority waste streams, including paper and packaging. The working on waste program and the environmental programs, we've been doing a lot of the fire extensions over a number of years, and also doing management of plastic and waste through these fire extensions. Through the recent PAKISA, we've been looking at initiatives called material recycling facilities, MRFs, at the local government level, and we continue to gain traction there. The other program we have is the Recycling Enterprise Support Program that talks about new entrants and emerging SMEs and co-ops in the recycling space that's also gaining a lot of traction and momentum. In terms of GO2, we talk about waste service delivery interventions, and there again we've been using the collective standards and our work with the COPTA to support the 27 districts through the municipal infrastructure grants and other interventions where we're working with MISA, SELDA and COPTA on a regular basis, finding interventions for the management of waste at the local government level. We continue to do this through the Green Economy. There's been a whole lot of incentives and programs under the Green Fund and other initiatives within the department. Through the PAKISA that was conducted last year, we're also looking at how industry could come to the party and private sector to assist with really commercializing what we call the circular economy and increasing more recycling opportunities in the recycling industry on scale. The waste continues to be an issue, and we say there will never be another waste. And this is also a serious matter share on the consumer side. So when it comes to litter, as I alluded to earlier, the litter aspect compared to waste management in terms of collection and infrastructure are two different things. So there's still the public awareness that needs to be heightened up, and we are doing that this year through the Tumamina program, in South Africa program, where we continue to create more and more awareness at the consumer level, public level, around recycling and the negative impacts of pollution from waste. In terms of goal 5 and the planned interventions around the data aspect of South Africa's waste system, regulations we require information from municipalities, industry is compelled to submit data to us on a regular basis, and this year we will be producing the new state of waste reports at the end of this financial year, and that will give us a better baseline in terms of how we're doing in the country from a data point. Goal 6 is also in terms of what is known as integrated waste management plans for provinces and municipalities, and there we've been looking at various options around the tariff system of treasury and the budgeting and the amount of money that is made available through the systems for the management of waste at all three spheres of government. Goal 7 is in terms of contaminated land remediation and how we use programs, not the indigenous remediation programs, but others that could be used for contamination and rehabilitation. And goal 8 is mainly about the compliance enforcement mechanisms. Moving on to the post-consumer side of plastic and the various end-of-life management options we have for that. I'm just going to quickly go into skip this slide, but into this slide. That tells you at the end of its life what happens to plastics and what are the management options for them. 28% of them produce recycled back furniture, recycled furniture, recycled decking. So there is quite a huge amount of potential for the use of recycled plastic back into making all kinds of things. You see the plastic timber sheeting, blow molding, and so forth. How do we compare in terms of end-of-life management options? What we see there, the number 75%, is actually the amount of plastic that ends up in the disposal sites around the country. Compared to Europe, that's only 31%, Switzerland 1%, the US 75%, Japan 70%. What we said in the chair is that this is a valuable resource. Generally, in terms of waste, in terms of plastic, there are options for recycling and recovery. But if you have to consider that a huge amount of them, in terms of the first slide I showed you, which is a very linear approach to the management of plastic all around the world, then we have to do a lot in terms of discouraging the disposal of plastic for landfill sites. So we are currently busy with a study on a consideration of the landfill disposal away from landfilling, but back into recycling, into things like bioacceptance, material recovery facilities, and all that. And generally, in terms of pushing a recycling economy, and more than that, what we call a closed loop circular economy, so that we don't have this problem of leakage of plastics into the environment. In terms of that, that's an economic disincentive, but the other one, and always ask questions, you know, how do you change behavior? You either regulate behavior to say thou shalt not do something, or you either incentivize behavior. That we, if you don't do this, we will give you that. So it's a capitalistic type of approach. So one of the considerations is to start an economic instrument in terms of taxation or disincentives. There are also regulations that you could pass on phase-outs. On bans, on consumer type of regulation and fines. In some countries around the world, if you drop a piece of litter, you will be fined for that. And at the same time, at the household level, we're introducing the separation of source regulations, which come with compliance enforcement and mechanisms for the implementation of these regulations. In terms of the way forward, the last slide there, is really looking firstly at how we regulate some of the things which may be easy to regulate. So the impact of microbeads that you see just now is a kind of short group that we could have from a particular source, which is cosmetics. And we think that this could be a low-hanging fruit that we could be easily managed in a very short period of time. At the same time, we want to complement that with regulations and guidelines of the separation of source guideline and eventually to the set of producer responsibility program, as well as some other controls and considerations we can have for single-use plastic products, like a number of countries are doing